Okay, hello everybody, and welcome back to another week of answering your shilas. This is week number 17, and again, everything should be l'zchus r'fuah shleima for Joko, and I thank Joko for putting together the list of questions I just learned this week, that he works on it with his father each week to whittle down the questions to a manageable 10 questions, and I appreciate that as well. So let's go through questions 1 through 10. Number one, what is the status of a newspaper that arrives on one's driveway Shabbos morning, was printed on Shabbos? May one read it or even move it? Happens to be, this is like a shaila that used to be the biggest shaila, meaning it used to be something that it was nogea to everybody when I was a kid, because everybody had newspaper delivery when I was a kid. That's how you found things out, because there was no cell phones, no smartphones, no internet. When I was a kid in camp, if I'm dating myself over here, my father would send me the sports section of the Monday sports section of the New York Times, and he'd mail it to me in camp, and I get it 3 days later, and that's how I found out how the Yankees were doing. It's less and less of a common shaila, because the print newspapers aren't really so common nowadays. But every once in a while you have it. So there are two issues that relate to the print newspapers. One issue is a type of muktzah called nolad, which is a very strong form of muktzah, meaning something that did not exist before Shabbos, and it came into existence on Shabbos, and therefore it is muktzah because it wasn't there before Shabbos. It wasn't a thing before Shabbos. So if the newspaper is muktzah, so then you're not allowed to move it at all, even if you're not reading it. You're just not allowed to handle the newspaper at all on Shabbos. It happens to be the isser of muktzah is not an isser to touch, it's an isser to move something. So there are heterim of tiltul kalachar yad and tiltul begufo and things like that. But meaning like kicking it or something like that. But stam to pick it up, if you hold it's nolad, is a problem. I think most poskim actually back in the day held that it is nolad. There are poskim that held that it's not, that the paper was in existence before Shabbos and the ink was in existence before Shabbos. And it's just, you know, that they put the ink together with the paper and cut it in a certain way, that's not nolad and therefore may not be muktzah. But I think the majority of poskim held that it is muktzah. So probably better not to handle a newspaper that gets that was printed on Shabbos and gets delivered on Shabbos. You may have issues if it comes from outside of the tchum also, even if it's not nolad, but usually it's not the case that it's coming from outside the tchum. You get a New York Times delivered to your house. It was printed probably in Queens or whatever. It's, you know, in you live in the Five Towns or whatever. It's usually not coming from outside of the tchum from before Shabbos. Meaning from on Shabbos. So that's one issue. One issue is the muktzah issue. The second issue that you have with newspapers is reading business material. So is an issur b'divrei Kabbalah that you're not supposed to read things that are business related. And the Shulchan Aruch says included in that is advertisements. So newspapers make their money by having ads. So a person should not be reading ads on Shabbos. What the heter is to read all the Jewish newspapers that are published during the weekend are not a nolad problem, but l'chora they are a mimtzoh cheftzcha problem, because that's meaning it's mostly ads. A lot of the Jewish newspapers, that's really how they make their money, is from the ads, and the ads are targeted toward our specific community, which makes it even worse, because you know it's harder to say that you're just stam interested. You know, it's really about the business. So that's a very, very good question to which I don't have a very good answer as to why one is allowed to read Jewish newspapers and magazines on Shabbos. You know, maybe everyone could go ask their rebbeim and their poskim and let me know if you find a good answer as to why it is mutter. Question two, how does Suda Shlishis work this year given that Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos? This is the million-dollar question, right? Meaning, let's just frame the problem. The problem is that the Yerushalmi says that anyone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is ki'ilu bo'a la rusasa b'beis chamav, that you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. And on the other hand, after whatever it is, like 10:30 in the morning or something, you're not allowed to eat chametz on Erev Pesach. And yet, there's a mitzvah to eat shalosh shudas, and Shulchan Aruch says, l'charchila, the way to fulfill that mitzvah, is to eat shalosh shudas after the second half of the day, after chatzos, after mincha, ideally, on Shabbos, and to have lecha mishnah. So there are a number of different options. Did we talk about this last week? I don't know, this seems familiar. But maybe I spoke about it somewhere else. But But the option that many people suggest is to have daven early, have wash before the sofs menachins chametz, eat your little bit of challah over a plastic tablecloth, then finish it up, don't leave any over, wrap up the tablecloth, throw it out, and then have the full your full suda shniyah on Shabbos, and then suda shlishis you have later on with just peiros or some fish or something like that later in the day. That's one option. Another option is to wake up really early, have a suuda, again with a little bit of challah, then bench and take a half-hour walk, and then come back and have another su'uda where you wash for a second time that day, all before like 10:30 in the morning, 10:45, whatever the zman is, you got to check your local zmanim. A third option is, and the one that Rav Shechter told us he's doing, is to have egg matzah, because the halacha is that while svardim are allowed to eat egg matzah on Pesach, Ashkenazim are not allowed to eat egg matzah on Pesach. We're choshesh that mei peros, when the flour is mixed with mei peros rather than water, that although it doesn't become real chametz, but it's memaher lahachmitz to become chametz nuksha, that it becomes a partial form of chametz midrabanan, and that can happen very, very quickly. And therefore, Ashkenazim don't eat egg matzah. But Rav Shechter believes, and it's a machlokas poskim, but Rav Shechter is among those poskim that believes that that iser for Ashkenazim to eat egg matzah, unless you're a cholid or whatever, does not apply to Erev Pesach. And therefore, you can have egg matzah for all your Shabbos sudos. You don't have to bring any chametz into your house and have any chametz whatsoever, and you could eat everything at the right time. As an added stringency, Rav Shechter is getting egg matzah that has grape juice rather than apple juice or eggs or something like that. That's based on the concept that the Rambam's Shita is that only if it's mixed with one of the Zion Mashkim does it count as matzah ashira. So it would have to be mixed with one of the Zion Mashkim, and grapes are one of the Zion Mashkim. So that's the basis of that concept. So okay, everyone will do what they do. It is something to remind ourselves that look how much there's written on this topic, and look how crazy people are going just to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Shalosh Shudis. So it's important to realize Shalosh Shudis is really important, and we should always try to fulfill the mitzvah of Shalosh Shudis in the best possible way. Question number three, if you're davening for someone you don't really know and you're unsure at a certain point what their status is, should you keep davening for them or not? So this comes up. So ideally, you should be davening for people that you know or have some connection to. I don't think there was ever a minhag to daven very specifically for random names on the list, meaning it doesn't, I don't know, I don't think that was ever the way people davened. I think that you daven in general for all Chole Yisrael and the Bracha Rufa'enu and everything else, but when there's someone that you know or know of, then you should daven for them by name. Or say extra tefillos for them. But if it's somebody you have no shaychus to, I'm not sure why. Like I'm not sure there was ever a practice to do that. So you should have the ability to check in on whether the person is still a chola. We do have many stories of Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Shechter among them, who was asked to daven for somebody and started davening for a person, and then years later found out that the person is all better or whatever. He said, why didn't you tell me? I've been davening for the person for years already. But the impression you get from those stories, not that you can pass them based on the story, is that until you hear otherwise, you continue to daven for the person, but every once in a while you want to check in. A lot of times it gets iffy because like you have a person who someone just asked me last week that his daughter, 14-year-old daughter, had cancer this year, and she just went through her last treatment. But within 2 years of the last treatment, it's got like a 35% chance. Okay, now we are up to question four. Question four, we have a china set last used 15 years ago for chametz. Is there a way to use it now for Pesach? Probably not. Meaning there is a shita of the Chacham Tzvi that holds that after 12 months, whatever blios there are in Kalim, whatever time there is in Kalim, just totally disappears. But poskim don't really hold that way. They do use it as a sniff lahakel when we have other tzedim lahakel. There's also a sheet in Rishonim that even klei cheres like china can be kashered by doing hagala gimel pa'amin, by dipping it in boiling water 3 times. But we don't poskim that way either. And then there is a shita in poskim that if it's a dinner plate, it's not a kli rishon. So even if you put a hot piece of meat on it, it's only a kli sheni, and kli sheni does not allow for the transference of tam. But again, we don't paskin that way either, because we paskin that any dover gush, any solid food, will have the capacity to transfer tam, even when it's in a kli sheni. That never takes on the status of a kli sheni, because it never takes the shape of its container since it's a solid food. So it's a bunch of shverakulas that you could technically put together. And sometimes b'makom hefsid, we do put those kulas together. Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva about someone who inherited a set of china from a grandmother or something, and they would have to throw it out, and it's a very expensive china, and it's going to be hefsid meruba for that person. So he said, okay, so wait a year, and then do hagalah 3 times, and then you could rely on that. But chumrat, the pesach, the chametz, I don't know if I'd be comfortable relying on that for chametz. Use it during the year, and then there won't be a hefsid. You'll still have the ability to use those plates. And how much of a hefsid meruba is it nowadays? It probably depends how fancy the plates are. Rav Neuberger has a remarkable story about that, about how he was once making like that sheet of Rav Moshe, and it turned out that the family that he was making for was making their decision as to whether to become Bali Tshuva or not, and the whole decision, the wife said, was going to hinge on whether she was able to keep her china. That's a rare kind of situation. Okay, question number 5. How can one healthily balance making Chag, but especially Chol HaMoed, half for Hashem and half for us? So the truth is, on the days of Chag itself, it's sort of built in, right? Meaning you have meals, and then you have time, and each meal is preceded by tefillah. And usually in shul, there's a drasha and there's Torah. So you try to make sure that you have meals. If you have a nap for every gashmiyistika thing, you should do something ruchniyistik. So you could have a 2-hour seder and on Yontif afternoon, and then go and hang out with friends and have some snacks. I mean, it's not that impossible to do. Chol HaMoed is a little more challenging. It depends on what your family situation is. The chatzi lachem could also be a chatzi lachem if it's making your parents happy that you're spending time with the family and connecting with cousins or whatever it might be. But you want to make sure that you're learning. You want to make sure that you're davening at a minyan that davens at a normal pace. That you're being careful about your tefillah. Okay, I don't have any brilliant insights on that. Number 6, is one permitted to shave on Chol HaMoed? So the pashtus is no, that shaving on Chol HaMoed is asur. The Gemara says that they made a gezeira that you're not allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed lest you not shave in advance of Yontif, because we're afraid if everyone could just wait to get a haircut or a shave on Chol HaMoed, then they won't get a haircut or shave in advance of Yontif. And that's why the Mishnah says that if you have people who were an absolute onus before Yontif, they were in jail or they had no access to, they were in these unusual circumstances, then they're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed or Yontif. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva that if you have a person who shaves every single day, so his decision to shave on Chol HaMoed will not hinge at all on whether he shaved on Erev Yontif or not, because even if he did shave on Erev Yontif, it's 3 days later now, and he would normally shave at this time. So Rav Moshe says that he understands why one would be mekil. He himself does not love it, but he says he understands why Me'ikra Adin would be mutter and one would be Mekil, that you're allowed to shave in Chol HaMoed. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Shechter holds that if you are allowed to be Mekil, then you should be Mekil. Meaning, if that Cheshbon is correct, then there is a Din of Kavod Yontif, and part of the Din of Kavod Yontif should demand that a person tries to look their best. Rav Shechter often comments that sometimes we follow Minhagim to such an extent that we allow the Minhag to override the halal halacha. There's a halacha that a person should be mechabed Shabbos, and it's a minhag not to shave during Sfira of 3 weeks. So Rav Shachter thought, maybe I didn't really, you should shave during Sfira of 3 weeks. The minhag should not override the halacha. That minhag was when people didn't shave all the time. So they didn't look scruffy. They had a long beard anyway, so it wasn't so much longer. And he has many examples of that, where people allow minhagim sometimes to override dinim, to override halacha, to override mitzvos, and it should really be the other way around. Okay, question number 7. Why don't Ashkenazim kasher glass? And how do I prevent the glass cover in my oven microwave from making the inside chametz? So glass is an interesting topic in halacha, because there are 3 shittos in Rishonim as to what the status of glass is. The 2 extreme shittos are the opinions that turn out to be the opinions of the Mechaber and the Ramah. The Mechaber is the most extreme shitto, Lekula, where he says glass is never baleya anything. It doesn't absorb any flavor whatsoever. So if it doesn't absorb any flavor whatsoever, then it's not going to ever become treif. So you could use the same glass kalim to cook meat in and to cook milk in, just not at the same time, but to cook meat and milk in, and that's fine. The Ramah assumes that glass is more chamur than most other kelim. It has a din like klei cheres. The halach of klei cheres is that it's baleya, all sorts of flavors, tastes, whatever you cook in it is absorbed in it. But like klei cheres, it's never polite. You can never kasher it, because the absorption is any yotzei midei dafna liolam. It never comes out of the walls of the kli. So since Ramah is machmir about klei cheres, that's why we don't kasher glass, because we hold that glass cannot be kashered. Rav Shachter often comments that Professor Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik's brother, was a chemist, and Rav Soloveitchik's brother said it was a davar pashut that the Sfardim are right in the Metzius, meaning glass is in fact not balea anything. So Rav Shachter said all the rabbanim in the world should get together and they should rescind that gzeira. But until they do that, we're still stuck with it. That glass is, if glass gets trafed up, that there's no way to kasher it. Now, I'll note that drinking glasses may be different, because drinking glasses typically have neither milchig nor fleshig in them, and nothing hot ever goes into them. So there is a minhag in many, many communities that you'd use the same drinking glasses for milchig meals and fleshig meals, because there's very little risk of any blia whatsoever getting into a drinking glass. So, but we're talking about glass that's used, to cook things in and things like that. That's used with very hot things. There's one of the young rabbanim here in yeshiva, Rabbi Javaheri, is a Sephardic fellow, and his wife is of Ashkenazi descent. So he said that he had his in-laws over for supper one night, and they have glass plates that they use because they're Sephardic. So they have glass plates, and they use the same plates for milchigs and fleshigs because they're Sephardic. So they're allowed to do that. And he was, his wife was serving chicken, and the in-laws were over, and they had chicken on the plate. And then he realized, uh-oh, last night there was hot lasagna on these plates. Are my in-laws allowed to eat off of these plates? And the pashtus is no, that they're not allowed to, because they are Ashkenazim. So that is, that's something, one of the big differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Sephardim do not need 2 sets of dishes if they just get glass dishes, So if you have limited space in your kitchen, it's quite a boon for Sephardim. Another one of those great Sephardi kulas. As far as the oven and the microwave from becoming chametz on the inside, some of the kashrus organizations say to cover the glass door, so that there are no blios of chametz. I think what we recommend is you just spray something caustic on it. You spray some oven cleaner, and then it becomes not roi lechilas kelev at all anyway, and any chametz that's not roi lechilas kelev is not a problem. Question number 8. What is the onesh if one intentionally or accidentally eats kitnios on Pesach if they are Ashkenaz? The onesh for accidental, I don't think there is an onesh. If you do it accidentally, it's a minhag. It could be that even for dinim d'rabbanan, there's no onesh for violating a minhag. That's what the Nesivos famously writes in Siman Reish Lamed Daled, that an isser d'rabbanan that's violated b'shogeg is not an isser at all. It doesn't require any kapara. for Nisa Drabanan violated Bishogeg because Isurim and Drabanan are all Isurim in the Gavra. It's not Isurim in the Chefza. And if the Gavra is not rebelling against anything, he's just made a mistake. So then he doesn't require any sort of kapara. Mistama, the same would be true for a minhag, for something like kitnios, which is only a minhag. Now, if you intentionally violate a minhag, again, onesh beis and shalmata is not going to do anything to you, but it's bad. It's paritz geder yishchanu nachash. A person who's paritz geder, who violates minhagim, is going to suffer something. Yishchanu nachash. Lo aleinu, he's going to suffer something for violating minhagim. It's not right. People should take minhagim very seriously. The halacha is a kitnius is mutter for a chola. So, but not everybody's a chola. Every time someone says, well, I have a restricted diet. Why do you have a restricted diet? Because I'm a picky eater. I don't like that. Does that make you a chola just because you're a picky eater? Not so pashut that you're allowed to violate these minhagim so easily. Number nine, being that it's been as long and most of us are going home to family, can Rebbe tell us to what extent we should be mechabed our older siblings lehalacha? So let me just say one thing before we get to the dinim of older siblings, and that is that one of the greatest ways to honor your parents is to get along with your siblings, older and younger. There is nothing that makes a parent more proud and gives them more nachas than when their kids are getting along with each other, than when they see their kids are best of friends. So leaving aside whatever halachas there are about older siblings, the level of kibud av, the aim that you're fulfilling by getting along with your siblings is worth it all. Now, there is a separate chiyuv of Achiv HaGadol, regardless of even if he's a half-brother from your mother or from your father, and even if the younger brother is a bigger Talmud Chacham, that's what the Gemara in Ksuba Stav Kuf Gimel Darshan's, Kabeid HaSavicha V'Asimecha, Esavicha Zu Esha Savicha V'Asimecha Zu Bali Mecha, and Vav Yaseiro L'Rabus is Achiv HaGadol. The extra Vav is to include Achiv HaGadol as well in the mitzvah of kibud av aim, and we paskin that way. We paskin that way in Shulchan Aruch. Now, the halacha we paskin, there's a discussion in the poskim that every brother that's older than you is included. Lav dafka the bechor or the oldest in the home. It's a discussion in the poskim. The Nagos Beis Lechem Yehuda, he quotes from the Kavanas Arizal that dafka the gadol ha'achim, the one that takes over for the father, is the mamali makom of the father, and that's the shita of others as well. However, the Birkei Yosef says that it's all the older brothers, Zecharim Unikevos, brothers and sisters, and it's even after Misas Aveim. And we assume, like Rav Poskim, we assume that that's the halacha, that that you're chayiv to honor Achiv HaGadol. So how exactly do you do the you're allowed to call him by his first name? I mean, you don't have I don't think you have to stand for Achiv HaGadol. So there, it's just showing him greater honor than you would show other people. Meaning, I think that's I don't know exactly how to be magdirit. You let them go first, take the first portion of food, things like that. Okay. Question number 10. How do we make the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim informative and meaningful for children, especially older children who already know quite well from school and from previous Siddurim? Yeah, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is not only about telling the basic skeleton of the story. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is about delving into the story, right? What do we learn from that story of all the Chachamim in Bnei Brak that were, Shigizma, Kriyashma, Shel Shachris, that they were, what were they doing? They weren't telling the basic elements of the story. There's always what to mine and learn from the story. I think I maybe mentioned one of the earlier shiurim that Rav Schachter always comments, based on many sources, that the mitzvah of Lel HaSeder is really supposed to be about emuna. So we should chazer over the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna. Nice thing to do at your Seder is give out a list of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna and see, as we go through the Haggadah, where do you find any of these Ikari Emuna, and see if people could spot all 13 Ikari Emuna at different places in the Haggadah. And, you could reward people for doing so. That could be a wonderful thing, to keep people engaged in the Seder and to make them look at the Haggadah with fresh eyes. So that's the way Torah is. You know, you learn Sefer Bereishis when you're 6 years old, and then you learn Sefer Bereishis when you're 60 years old, and every year in between, and it's still, you know, you're still finding new things. Rabbi Saul Reisman comments sometimes that, like, he says sometimes being Mavrish Sedrin, he said, well, did someone put this Rashi in over the, since the last time I saw it? You know, it seems so new because you see it in a different way. You're able to come up with new things. So that's just what the Ikar Emunah thing, I think, is a very helpful Eitzah, but there are many other Eitzahs as well. Okay, wishing everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I think we are going to do another Answering Your Shailas next week before Pesach, but in the meantime, everyone should enjoy Bein HaZmanim and should get a lot out of Bein HaZmanim and make sure to have a productive Bein HaZmanim. Okay, have a great week, everybody.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ziprecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ziprecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ziprecruiter.com/zip.